Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and I am here with Dom. Dom, what's happening today?
Not much, as always. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Now, today, coming up on the show, what we are going to be doing is breaking down the latest episode of Survivor Philippines and talking about how we see things playing out from here, analyzing all the strategy, as we typically do. Before we get into all of that, though, we want to let you guys know for sure that yesterday we recorded our second annual Survivor Hall of Fame discussion podcast with good friend of the show, Gary Wise. And it should be up sometime relatively soon. And if you haven't subscribed on iTunes already, definitely make sure you do that to get the Hall of Fame discussion episode as well as all of our future episodes.
Yeah, for sure. We talked to Gary this time last year before the most recent cast of being inducted about the Hall of Fame. So if you're interested in the topic in general, then go back and check that out because a lot of the stuff we said then is still relevant today. We tried to avoid repeating ourselves too much. So a lot of what we said in this year's show was more about kind of Hall of Fames in general, and there were a lot of tangents which went off onto various Survivor topics. So even if you're not interested in the Hall of Fame specifically, then hopefully there's a lot to interest you in there anyway.
Yeah, a lot of very, I think, like philosophical discussion, discussion about like the metagaming of the Hall of Fame.
Right, and Gary's always a good person to get into that sort of stuff with, so yeah, definitely go and check that out. We didn't really intend when we sat down to do it that it would be over 4 hours, but I mean, you know, that's what ended up happening, so that's probably going to get split up into two parts, but we hope to have that up for you before it becomes dated.
That's right, yeah, and so I guess let's get into Survivor Philippines unless we have something else to add before we do so.
No, let's do it.
Okay, so I just as a quick reminder, last episode we lost Artis, and because Scoopin flipped, and I would include, as we mentioned last time, I think Lisa was well aware that Scoopin was about to flip, she just didn't want to hurt Artis's feelings, and so that's where we're at as we begin episode 10, and it looks, to me at least, and it looks like they're showing to us that Pete and Abby are going to be the ones on the outside of the tribe now, as the other six people left in the game are all talking about wanting to go to the final six together.
Yeah, no surprises there, really. Although I thought there was an interesting editorial shift where, as you said last episode, the focus was on Lisa's decision, despite the fact that it was apparently Scooby who ended up deciding the final outcome. But this episode, in the previously on segment, they made it look like it was Scooby's decision all along. But they talked about how Lisa had this internal struggle, but ultimately Scooby was the one who ended up deciding which way the vote was going to go. And I thought that's kind of interesting, because if you're going to do that, then wouldn't you just make that a thing that you started the previous episode and not spring it on us now?
That's something that crossed my mind as well. And I know that as much praise as we've heaped onto the editors and well-deserved praise for all that they've done this season, I know from time to time they split it up between different teams episode by episode. So maybe there was some kind of disconnect there. I don't know what other explanation, or maybe they, because it seems like once again there was a bit of revisionist history on the previously on. It also said, like, Lisa ended up staying true to her alliance, and if the secret scenes were indications, I would say Lisa was just voting for Artis out of, maybe respect's the wrong word, but knowing full well he was going to go.
Yeah, usually the editors like to remain consistent, even when that means that one part of the story they're telling doesn't match up with what actually happened. So it was interesting to see that here it was kind of disjointed.
Mm. Yeah, and now when we talk about actually what it's moving this game moving forward now, as I mentioned, it appears to me that Pete and Abby, the rest of the tribe's kind of making it clear to them, you know, you guys are going to be on the outside looking in, at least for the time being. And this is something that I understand why in the game sense, because they are mean people and people don't, they've been coming after several of the people that are still left in the game, such as Malcolm or such as Penner at the previous point, such as Scoopin, a lot of people. At the same time, though, it strikes me as slightly, maybe irresponsible is the wrong word, but I feel like there's at least worth considering. Now that Artis is gone and there are really only two of them left, that could be something I might want to keep both of them around for the final seven and take out one of these more likable or capable players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that could make sense for a few individual people, but it seems very simplistic to just say, well, no one likes them, to take them to the end so that you can beat them.
Yeah.
Very first-level thinking.
Mm-hmm. No, totally. I feel like over the course of the episode, we saw a lot of people, and maybe, again, this is perhaps just the edit, but very quickly dismissed the idea of not booting one of Pete or Abby this round over the course of this whole episode. And I felt like that is something more people should have taken more seriously, an idea.
Yeah, it might be the sort of thing where even if you personally want to keep one or both of them around, if everyone else around you seems like they don't, then it might be the best thing to do to just go with the flow and not try and trade things up too much. And so, Like, it may be the case that individually, each person might think that they have a stake in keeping one of them around, but they just think, well, the group doesn't want it, so it ends up not happening, despite the fact that it may be more plausible than any of them might believe.
Right, and yeah, it also may be a situation where they all feel that, yes, it might be slightly in my own best interest, but perhaps in making an effort to do this, I'm burning too much political capital.
Yeah, and also the question is, well, if it's not one of them, then who else is it going to be? Like, it's difficult to have that kind of open discussion as a group when you know there's going to be one of the people in the group that's going home, if not one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of crazy ideas got floated around about this whole tribal council, and we're getting to plenty of them. But now, just back to the episode itself, this is right off the bat. We see Lisa, who, after, again, knowing how the vote was going to go down, despite voting with Abby, now says, I really no longer want to be in an alliance whatsoever with Abby, and I want to be upfront with her about that. And she wants to go and kind of break up with Abby, is how she phrases it. And this, to me, again, is something that stood out as, like, why are you doing this? You just voted with her. As far as she's concerned, at least, you're one of the more likely people to be on her side. I don't know why one would go out of one's way to go remind Abby, hey, I don't want to go tell her, I don't want to work with you anymore, especially someone as explosive as Abby.
Well, I think that Abby, after having seen Artis be blindsided the previous night, is going to be thrown into a fit of paranoia. She's going to be hounding Lisa for some kind of response. And so even if Lisa's not the kind to confront her about it, it may be that she doesn't have any choice about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you think that Lisa wanting to be, I think very high on Lisa's list of priorities is wanting to be upfront with people and playing like a good Christian game, as we've seen put it. How much do you think that weighed into this?
Oh, I think it's a pretty heavy part of it. Like, I don't think anyone was surprised by the way that Lisa responded to it. But I just think that no matter what she might have wanted, her hand was forced by the way that Abby would have been talking to her. Like, when Abby comes up to you and asks, well, are you still with me? Then Lisa, knowing that she's going to be flipping on her, it doesn't really make that much sense to lie at that point because her hand's pretty face up.
Okay, that's fair enough. There's some instances coming up where there's perhaps more misplaying about future long-term alliances that we'll be getting to. Next, let's get to the reward challenge, and they're playing for a spa day and some delicious food and fine cocktails. And this is, not a ton. We don't spend a ton of time talking about the challenges, but Abby Maria finally gets to step out on the challenge field, and this is some great stuff because it becomes quite clear she doesn't really know what's happening, and Probst goes out of it. Abby, you clear on what's happening out here? And she's just straight up honest. No, not really.
Yeah, like maybe there's a reason people chose to just sat out of all the previous ones.
I don't know. It didn't seem like the rules were complicated to understand. It just seemed like...
they were, but we're not really talking about anyone with a kind of good grasp of what's going on around her here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and perhaps maybe, cultural differences between, she's Brazilian. This is a theme that we've seen coming up. Maybe that had some role to play.
Although, in fairness, we saw Scoop in almost Bungle the Challenge as well, and it seemed like a few others had places where they were almost about to flip over the wrong one, and then they just caught themselves at the last moment and did it correctly. And had they not checked themselves, then they might have done the same thing.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, it seemed like a lot of people were just blindly flipping, running to the next circle and flipping both, in presuming that that would then flip their tribes up and either tribes down. I was thinking about if you're playing against someone who just seems to be blindly doing that, probably like a Scoop and a Penner type who's just going so all out in this challenge, flip theirs over, leave yours face down, they'll then flip both face up as you've then flipped your third one face up and it's over.
Yeah, I remember seeing a comment, I think it was from Jeff Probst somewhere, I can't remember where, that the challenge didn't play out the way that they expected it to when they ran it with the Dream Team.
Oh, really? Do you know what went differently?
I don't. I'm trying to remember it now. I can't remember where I found the article, but I think they didn't expect people to just be running around racing each other as like a test of endurance to try and flip all of them over.
See, when the challenge was being initially, when the rules were being read out, I didn't think that was going to be the case either. Firstly, because I thought they were going to be doing it in teams, and I thought it was going to be a group of three is going to be standing one on each team within each circle. Like dueling, basically. And then when it became individual, I'm struggling to think of how they could have anticipated it going slower when it seems like if you're the faster of the two people, the correct line for you to take is always to try to outrun the other person.
Yeah, although obviously that's going to be the wrong strategy for one of them because, again, only one of them can be faster. Maybe they just thought that it would be like, one person would be staking out a position near one of the stations, and then as soon as the other person moved, then they would, like, kind of react to that or something. I don't know. Maybe they didn't expect it to be constant movement.
Right, yeah, it's kind of like in a boxing match. You anticipate the people kind of dancing around a little bit and throwing some small jabs at each other. You don't expect them just pummeling each other straight off the bat.
Yeah, do you think this is the kind of challenge where there's an opportunity for someone who's smart to outthink it?
That's an interesting question. Have you managed to outthink this challenge, Dom? Is that why you're asking?
Well, I'm not smart, so it wouldn't make sense for me to think about that. But I'm trying to think about it now, and it seems like, yeah, I'm starting to think of how they might have expected it to go differently.
That's what I was trying. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking, which is if you're going to have someone just kind of stake out and play one position, it's going to be pretty impossible for that person to win because they're eventually going to have to flip all three.
Right. I mean, maybe they thought that if one person was running around all three trying to change them, then one other person would just be going back and forth between two of them, not trying to win on their own, but just trying to flip over the other person's. And so they would wait until the other person was tired out, and then they could just go around and flip all three before they could get to their own.
Oh, maybe another boxing analogy, a little rope-a-dope, let the other person get tired and then just go in and go for the kill.
Right. But obviously, if both people try that, then it devolves into two people just standing there, which doesn't really work out for anyone.
Yeah, and maybe they can then just negotiate for the reward, like we saw earlier. All right, well, far too much time already spent on that reward challenge, and despite Abby Maria's presence on the team, her team actually ends up winning reward, and these were not very fair teams, I would say, because the rest of her team was comprised of Pete, Malcolm, and Carter.
Right, suddenly her team winning in spite of her rather than because of her.
That's right, yeah, and as they arrive on reward, this is something I thought was very interesting. As it's presented to the viewers, at least, they sit down and Malcolm immediately says, all right, guys, above all, no strategy today. We're just going to take the day off. What did you think about this? Because this actually kind of surprised me.
Well, it makes sense given what he goes on to say in a minute, which is that all the people that he wants to talk strategy with that he's most likely to align with are all back at camp. And so if he tries to put on some pretense here, then it's just not going to make a lot of sense to other people. And I can kind of understand his reasoning there. Although it is based on this assumption that he should want to be with the other people that are back at camp, which we can question.
Right, and that's exactly the issue I might be taking with it. And now, the more I think about it, really, though, I see Abby, Pete, and Carter compared to people like Denise and Penner and Scoopin' and Lisa back at camp. And I think in Malcolm's position, he's going to have a lot more to talk about with the older group. Despite being closer in age to the people he's now off on reward with, I don't think he wants to be playing at the end with them, even though we could argue that he might want to be.
Yeah, maybe what he thought was that with Carter there, even if he did want to team up with Pete and Abby somehow, he didn't trust Carter not to go back and spill everything to some combination of Penner and Scoop and all of those other people.
Mm. Now, do you think that this idea of him wanting to be playing back with all the people at camp, do we want to be getting into the merits of that right now?
Well, it might not be correct to take him at his word, by which I mean, he obviously not taking him up on what his own beliefs are, but maybe the way that that confessional was presented didn't reflect what he actually thought. And what I mean by that is, because all it takes is for one of those people who's on the reward with you to not be in your plans for it to be incorrect to talk about strategy with the group as a whole. Like, let's say that he doesn't want to go to the end with Lisa and the people he's on reward with are Lisa and other people that he likes. Even though, those other people are in the majority, it still doesn't make sense to try and get anything together with Lisa there. And so maybe that he didn't trust, let's say, Abby or Carter or whoever, and so it didn't make sense to talk about it with them, even though he doesn't want to go to the end with all of Penner and Denise and Scoopin' because he knows that that's a harder scenario for him. It may be that he trusts Denise, for instance, and maybe trusts Lisa, but he doesn't trust Scoopin' and Penner, just hypothetically.
Okay, yeah, okay. That's very valid to me. And it's also possible Malcolm really just wanted a day off from the game.
Yeah, which is, I think particularly for him, someone who's had his back up against the wall for quite a while now, it's got to be tempting to just try and step back and, not just as an emotional response, but I think that's rational as well, because if you're able to take that time to just decompress, then it means that when you do go back into the game properly, then you're going to be more mentally prepared for it.
And, he got a nice little mani-pedi and some shampoo for his psychopath hair.
Carter managed to get a pedicure or a manicure, we're not quite sure which.
Yeah, good eye, Probst. And so, Okay, I think the next thing we're talking about, actually, is when they get back from reward, Abby, as Malcolm goes on to describe it, Abby describes the reward to the rest of those who are not eligible to go on it with the social grace of a Mack truck, which is she will not shut up about how amazing every aspect of this reward was.
Yeah, it's just, we talked about how Abby's kind of actions in this episode can be brushed off as cultural differences, but are we really to believe that in Brazil it's the done thing to just go and rub a reward in people's faces like this?
I don't know. And this strikes me as something where this is just Abby fundamentally misunderstanding Survivor, right?
Well, not just misunderstanding Survivor, but I think in life, like if you've had an opportunity that other people wanted and weren't able to get, then you don't go and just talk about it in front of them when you need something from them. It's just a stupid thing to do.
That's very fair criticism, I would say. And now Abby, I really like Abby. She's grown on me. Not as far as I'm not rooting for Abby to win. I'm aware she's not going to take it down. But as a character, I think Abby is fantastic casting. I think she's absolute gold on TV.
Oh yeah, definitely. She's not the type of person who is so repulsive that you want to turn off your TV when she comes on the screen. You're kind of drawn to her with this kind of morbid fascination.
Yeah, that's right. It continues to stun me that she's stayed in the game as long as she has, playing as she has. But it's fascinating to watch, I think.
I don't think it's that surprising, because remember, she never had to go to a tribal council pre-merge. And so when she got to the merge, other people had to stick with her alliance for the time being. And then at the first convenient opportunity, they flipped on them and now she's in the hot seat. Like, it's not as if she managed to escape being targeted before.
No, that's true. I think it's just more, I was surprised that she was even able to ascend to such a position that she was once in the first place.
Okay, yeah.
I want to say, I'm really glad that she's stayed in the game as long as she has. I think she's far more entertaining to watch than many of the people we've seen booted.
Really?
Yeah, I think she brings something to the season that would not otherwise be there if she were out long ago.
I mean, I can buy that in the case of people like Katie or Dana or whoever, but I think but like Angie, Russell Swan, all would have been entertaining in their own way. And maybe it doesn't make sense to compare them and say, well, Angie would be better for the show than Abby would be, but I don't think you can say that they would have been worse.
I think you can pretty clearly say that Angie would have been an overall less entertaining than Abby in the grand, big picture.
I don't know. I think it's the kind of thing where what you find entertaining is largely subjective, and so if somebody says, I find this person more entertaining than Abby, yeah, I wouldn't fault them for that. And if somebody said, I find Abby so annoying that I actually don't enjoy watching it again, I think you can't fault them for that.
Right, yeah, I'm sure many people have Abby as a -2 and even a 0. Someone who's just not doing anything would be better than her.
Yeah, that's true, but I think even the people who dislike her on that level realize that the show needs a villain and that she's a perfect person to fill that role, given that, I mean, you have people like Pete and whoever, but they're not villainous, they're just people who don't happen to be heroic, if that makes sense. You need someone to actively root against in order to make the people who you're rooting for more likable.
And now it got me thinking, because I know Abby was, at least according to her, originally slated to play in Token Sheens, but I think she said they thought that she would have like some home field advantage, it being in Brazil and her being Brazilian. And now that I'm fine with, of course, watching her play on such a season as good as this, but I wish she had played pre-Heroes versus Villains, because I think if you put Abby on that Villains tribe instead of, for instance, Danielle DiLorenzo, we get a much, much better season. Just thinking about her interacting with Russell and Tyson and Boston Rob and Coach.
Well, you take that to the extreme. Imagine a tribe that is just like Russell, Abby, Colton, Corinne, Naonga, Jane. Just put all these people together and then to have them fight to the death and then the last person left gets to leave the island or something. It's like, I think with somebody like Abby, when you want her to play the villain, and all the people who you classify as villains, people like, I don't know, I think you could describe Tyson that way, for instance. But someone like Tyson, he's good enough at Survivor that he's going to be there long enough, often enough, for his role as a villain to be relevant. Whereas with Abby, you can easily imagine her being the first or second boot and that aspect of her personality never coming to fruition.
Okay, I would say, in the same sense that I think you can imagine Randy Bailey as he was being an early boot in Heroes versus Villains, but it's still going to come out as long as he's there.
I guess, but for instance, if you put Abby on Token Teens, I think she probably goes out within the first three episodes or so. And so, yeah, for the episodes that she's there, she's a big character, but then beyond that, she doesn't really add anything to the season because she can't.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, sure. And it was actually, I thought it was a striking contrast to see, as she was talking to the rest of the camp, Malcolm there, like, hanging his head, like, oh my god, girl, what are you doing to these people? Like, why are you doing this? And he's just standing completely in silence, and someone ends up asking Carter what his favorite aspect of the reward was, and he takes some time to think about it, and it arrives at the sauces with the calamari were probably the best part, which is not a bad. We see people freak out when they get, like, spices on the rewards and stuff.
Yeah, we saw actual human feelings from Carter this episode, which is it is surprising. It caused me to question everything I thought about the season.
Well, when we were thinking about last week what it would take to elicit some kind of human emotion from Carter, sauces didn't cross my mind, but there you go. That's the answer.
Yeah, it's a complete upheaval of everything I thought I knew. But I don't know. I think Carter, it's weird. I think if he was a bigger presence in the season, I would like him a lot less. But the fact that he just doesn't do anything, it just kind of pops up to be derpy now and again, makes me like him more than I thought I would.
See, many weeks ago, you accused me of liking Carter ironically, which I said, yes, I absolutely do, kind of. I think it is ironic. And I think now you're at least on board with understanding what that means. Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe it was too hasty there.
Mm-hmm. Now, in more Abby Maria showcasing her survivor abilities, she now decides that it's the time to announce to everyone on the tribe that she's no longer going to be the cook. She's had enough with that, and yes, she still wants to eat, but no, she'll not be doing any cooking as long as she's on the outs.
Yeah, the most surprising thing to me about this was that they had previously trusted her for, like, 20-something days with the ability to use fire, which, I mean, you have to imagine that if not Scooby, then at least her would have fallen in it by now.
Yeah, there's some power rankings there for person I less want around the fire preparing myself. I don't even know if I would trust Abby at least to cook for me that well. I feel like she would screw it up.
Yeah, the idea of her actually being competent at something is not something we've been used to so far.
Yeah, and perhaps, you know, people who know her personally would recognize and say, hey, Abby's a fully competent person, but at least the Abby we've seen so far has not demonstrated to either of us, I would say, or to many people watching the show, as someone overly capable with things in general. So.
Very nice way of putting it.
With things, yeah. She struggles at things. So this is actually, I think, where we first start seeing her getting into it with Denise, which... Denise, whose actions I feel were fully justified here in questioning Abby, saying, so I'm unclear at least on what you're really trying to come to say to us, Abby. Are you just saying, because it strikes me once again as something that there's no real reason why Abby would consider this a remotely good game move, and thus it's hard for Denise to understand where she's coming from in making this proclamation, I think.
Maybe Abby just given up at that point and is thinking, well, if I only have 3 or 6 days left and there's nothing for me to gain by cooking for them, then why put in the effort?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's exactly what Abby was thinking. I think she was saying, fuck all of you guys, I'm done playing, I know you're not going to let me win. Which is obviously a remarkably immature attitude. And you see Penner actually with the response of like, well, we know you have the idol, you know you have the idol, you know you're not going to go anywhere for a while, what is with this? Like, you have right. At least one more round, why aren't you trying?
Yeah, I mean, maybe she just thought that, yeah, okay, she can buy herself one more round, but after that, then she's still dead to rights. She can't do anything about it, which, again, is probably not true, but she makes it true by the fact that she reacts this way.
Exactly. It's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy if she refuses to let anyone work with her. And I know we've spent a lot of time talking about Abby so far today, and it really, I think, is because this episode, in large part, even though Pete's the one who ends up going home, which we'll be getting to quite shortly, it was really a character piece on Abby for a substantial portion of the episode, I think.
Yeah, this episode was a homage to Abby's all-pervading incompetence. Like, there's every aspect of her personality, every area of life out there on Survivor, it was just showing that Abby is just completely unable to function. It's kind of cruel, but at the same time, Abby brought this upon herself by her action, so it's hard to have that much sympathy for her.
Right, yeah, I would say one of my favorite things when you described Danielle from Big Brother 14 was her grasp on reality is tenuous at best, and I would say the same about Abby Maria, at least as far as the Abby Maria we've been shown, which I think is right. Not so far from true to life.
Well, a lot of people who have met Abby in real life, like other Survivor alumni, seem to get on pretty well with her. Whereas I think Danielle, like the same delusional Danielle you saw on the house, is the same person you see in real life. Like, I think it's easier to forgive Abby just being generally abrasive out there because sometimes being in those conditions does that to you. Whereas with Danielle, I think that speaks to more deep-seated psychological problems.
All right. Well, I mean, we don't need to get too far into that right now. I think we're going to be skipping over a bunch of the actual meat of this episode just very quickly because a lot of what we saw this week was some long-term strategy discussion between who we've been discussing as the long-term winner candidates. And that's we're going to be putting that off. We're going to go through Tribal Council before that, actually, because it was a pretty straightforward thing. What we kind of were expecting to see is what we saw. So we're just going to basically mention that in passing and how it all played out. Talk about some of that, and then talk about what really the episode developed strategically.
Right,
so yeah. It's worth noting, I think, there's not really anything to talk about the immunity challenge, but Carter ends up getting the individual immunity, which basically the only thing is that Pete doesn't have it, is all that really matters about that.
Right, yeah, I think the editors realized that they couldn't really do anything this episode to make the result not look predictable. They gave it a kind of cursory try with the whole Will scooping off whoever flipped to take out Malcolm storyline, but I think if you've been watching the show for any other time, you knew that probably wasn't going to happen. So they focused more on making the other aspects of the episode exciting, namely just tearing Abby apart, basically.
Right, yeah. The whole time they've been forcing this idea of these six are going to stay together down our throats, and then after Pete does not win immunity, excuse me, he understands, okay, my head's now on the chopping block, I got to scramble. He goes around asking various people within the six, okay, look, we can make this play on Malcolm now. And ultimately, that doesn't end up coming to fruition, as Dom mentioned, somewhat predictably.
Right. So I guess the first question that arises from this is, do you think there's any way that Pete could have saved himself? Like, I'm glad that he tried to put up a fight at least, and he identified that Malcolm was a big threat and trying to get people to take him out. Do you think this was the strategy that had the best chance of keeping him in the game, though?
This is something I've actually spent a bit of time thinking about, and I actually do. I think it's obviously there are a lot of arguments for and against Malcolm being the target, and that's what I mean when I say I first of all obviously admire Pete putting up a fight, as you just mentioned, and it comes down to me is Malcolm, basically the question is Malcolm the correct person to be going for, and I think the answer is yes, because while Malcolm is the one who has an idol, and yes, if he gets wind of this, could quite easily theoretically play as idol, I think he's not going to anticipate anyone flipping, and when you're in Pete's position, you want to go with the high, if your plan does come in, which you understand is not a high percentage of the time, you want it to have the biggest impact possible, and I think that would be getting rid of Malcolm.
I agree that Malcolm was unlikely to play his idol, but I think that doesn't matter. What really matters is the perception that other people have of the likelihood that that would happen, because I think a lot of people get perhaps understandably very paranoid about someone using the idol. And so if they're considering Pete's picture, then they might think, well, even if I do this and it ends up working the way we want, then there's a little chance it might fail if Malcolm uses the idol. And if that happens, then I'm screwed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so are you with me on saying that you like this move or no?
Well, I'm saying that for someone who's in the six and considering flipping over, this is a very big step to be taking, because potentially you could be flipping yourself into a minority. Like, even if you manage to take out Malcolm, it's still going to be 4-3 going to the next round with you being in a 3. And so if you're unable to make a big impact with this move, then there's no real reason to do it in the first place. And so you might think, well, this is already very risky to begin with, and now if you add this extra layer of risk with Malcolm maybe using the idol, then that's enough to sway me into not doing it and just taking the safe route.
Okay, when you're one of the six taking the safe route, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Which then for Pete might mean that it might be correct to try and get somebody else be booted instead.
Okay, well, who do you think would then be his best target?
Well, that's a question, because you can maybe go for Penner again, potentially. Or you could shoot for someone like Lisa or Denise, who isn't really that offensive, but at the same time, you could flip the logic that I'd be using and say, well, if you are going to make this big move, then you want it to have an impact, and just taking out someone like Lisa isn't really going to do that.
Well, I think it's a bit... I think taking out Lisa would be certainly something that would be okay with Pete, because probably, if it's not going to work for Malcolm, as long as it's someone, otherwise it's going to be him. The thing is, I think with people like Lisa or like Denise, because those are people who cross my mind as well, you're going to have, I think, a hard time finding the votes on them. Like, finding anyone to, that's willing to flip on them.
Yeah, that's true as well. I think it would be easier to get someone to want to take Malcolm out than it would be to suddenly wake up and decide that they need Denise gone or whatever.
Right, yeah, I think it's a bit too wolfy, if you want to use that word, to go up to someone like Scoop and who you to go up to the person who you think has the highest likelihood and saying, hey, name, you know, name your price. Who do you want us to put our votes on?
Yeah. So one other suggestion I've heard is that Pete could have taken an entirely different tack and try and get Abby to not play the idol somehow. And the way I've heard that he might have done this is, if he goes to her and says, look, they're going to split the votes. Even if somehow I survive tonight, then I'm gone next week anyway. So the best thing for us is if one of us stays with the idol to try and shake things up as much as possible. And so, for instance, if you vote for me, I go home, you get to keep the idol and just go and cause some havoc. I think Abby's the type of person who might buy into that. And so here's what you would do. You know that the others are splitting the votes. And if they split it 3-3, then if Abby votes for you now, you can vote for Abby. And if Abby doesn't play the idol, then it's 4-4. And they've said that getting the idol out is a bigger priority to them than getting Pete out, who maybe is marginally more threatening. Well, not marginally, but like getting the idol out is the highest priority at this point. So on the revote, they would take out Abby. And now you're there at final seven, a crucial spot in the game where you're a potentially useful swing vote.
Right. It's very it's a Mookie and Alex situation, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although that was slightly different because at that point, Alex didn't have an idol and they were just playing around the possibility that he did. Whereas this time, everybody knew that that was like a tangible possibility.
Oh, yeah. Not even a tangible possibility. They know the idol's going to get played, I think. Right. Yeah, sure. And these are all very interesting. There was another idea that I had. Someone tweeted at me, actually, the idea of Pete just putting his, or Abby putting her vote on Pete and just sitting on her idol, knowing that the majority is then going to be 4-3-1. What do you think about this?
Yeah, that's true as well. Although, we try not to look at things from Abby's perspective, because if she was the type of player who was able to think of that kind of strategy, then she wouldn't be in the spot in the first place, most likely. Like, this is going to be a recurring theme in our analysis this week and in future weeks, where, for instance, we might say that it would make sense for Carla to flip over and vote out Malcolm or whatever, but if Carla was the type of guy who would flip over and vote out Malcolm, the entire game up to this point goes very differently, and this isn't even something which comes up.
Right, yeah, and I think the other thing worth noting about this idea is, if any of those votes go wrong, then you, Abby, yourself, run a very high risk of Tysoning yourself here.
Yeah, and there's actually no good reason that it should be split 3-3. There's actually no disadvantage to splitting it 4-2 instead, because that plays around the possibility of Pete and Abby mixing up their votes in some way. And so if you split it 4-2 on Pete, let's say, then if Abby doesn't use the idol, then Pete is going home. And similarly, if you put it 4-2 on Abby, then if Abby doesn't use the idol, then Abby is going home. And you can lock in that for sure.
Right, yeah. It's hard to mess up if you're part of the six here, if that is, in fact, all of your goals.
Yeah. So I guess one question is, if you think it's possible that somebody is going to take up Pete on his offer, then if you're the person who's in control of directing the votes within the six, so you're saying you vote for Pete, you vote for Abby, and so on, is there a way that you coordinate the vote to make that less likely? Because the way that it has to be done is, if Abby's playing the idol, then it has to be one of the Pete votes that's flipping over.
Right, yeah, if you, Malcolm, I think the discussion was primarily centered around, if you're Malcolm and you get to pick, you understand that you might be the one who's in jeopardy, and you can handpick who's voting for who within the six, the fundamental principle, I think, is you want the most likely people, the most people that you think are least likely to flip, the most trustworthy people, to be on the person without the idol. Because, right? Am I saying this backwards or no?
Say it again.
In this instance, sorry, I'll backtrack. So in this instance, say you're Malcolm and you're concerned about Scoopin flipping. You don't want Scoopin to be able to flip onto Abby.
Correct, yeah.
Right. And so you want Scoopin on Abby initially, which is where Scoopin ended up.
Yeah, I think it's largely an academic question because I don't think that anybody within the six was seriously considering that anyone else might do this. And so, like, I think it would be easy for someone who wanted to flip to get themselves to be a Pete vote.
Oh, interesting. Because this is something that we saw, because this is a similar situation to Heroes versus Villains JT's decision where he had to have initially been, a Colby vote for this to work.
Right, and we in Heroes of the Villains, we didn't see how much of an effort that took for him to get himself to be a Colby vote. But for instance, like if once you've agreed that this is what's going down, that you're splitting the vote somehow, then it's very easy if you want to be one of those peak voters to say, well, like let's say I'm Scoobin, and can say, well, me, Denise, and Penner are voting for Pete, and then the other three are voting for Scoobin, running for Abby. And no one has a reason to question that unless they're suspicious that this might happen in the first place.
Right, yeah, I think there's actually a lot of value in being the one who come up with some metric that will look to the other people as arbitrary, where, say, you have a name that comes alphabetically early in the alphabet, or alphabetically early, I guess. Yeah,
I think it's very easy to just come up with a reason to do it however you want, because, for instance, if you're Scoobin, you can say, well, Pete's just been a dick to me since the start of the game. It would matter to me symbolically if I was able to write Pete's name down and be one of the people to get him out.
See, that comes across as more suspicious to me and more like you're trying to find a reason to find an innocuous reason, a seemingly innocuous reason for me to just be okay with you putting your vote on that person. I would be more interested if it was like, okay, well, guys are going to vote this way, girls are going to vote this way. If you're someone who wants to flip it, that suits your cause.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I agree with most of it. I just don't think that people were really thinking about it in those terms. I don't think it's a possibility that any of them entertained that anyone else might be seriously considering flipping.
Yeah, this is certainly to a certain extent some fancy play syndrome here on our parts, even just thinking about it like this. But it's at least worth, because this is a concept I think at least worth touching on, because it did come up as far as if someone is going to flip, they need to be on a certain person of one of the two. They need to be able to flip off of Pete and onto Abby or Malcolm.
Right. So we're going to go away from this question quickly and then come back to discussing whether we think anyone in the six should have flipped. Before we do that, though, I think it's worth touching on the Tribal Council, because although not much of worth when it comes to strategy happened, there was a lot of interpersonal stuff that was quite interesting here.
Yeah, at Tribal Council, I think, began with Probst just talking to Malcolm about his idol and how much of a threat that made him, and from there it was basically all about Abby Maria, at least. And now, one thing I've noticed is Jeff Probst has actually been taking a bit of heat, and he addressed this issue, actually, on Rob Has a Podcast recently, talking about how his involvement is becoming more of a presence in the game. And he's more okay with that as time goes on because he felt it would be unnatural and so on. And this is another instance this season where, and again, we've had nothing, very little but praise for all of this season, but it does seem to me once again that Probst was, I don't think out of line is the right way to put it, but perhaps overstepping his bounds.
Well, I don't understand that criticism in general, and I certainly don't understand it in this case. I mean, it seems, from our conversations off air, that you're kind of sympathetic to it, at least here. So could you get into why that is? Because I don't see where it's coming from.
Yeah, and it's not so much out of sympathy for Abby or whatever. It's more I don't feel like that's something I'm curious to know what Probst's motivation were in bringing up that idea. Was it an attempt to soften the blow and kind of give some kind of justification? Or was it, as I think it came across to many people, and I'm sure this wasn't his intention, but it certainly, I think, could, there are connotations that it was, like, insensitive to a certain degree.
How is it insensitive?
Maybe, Dom, this is a cultural difference between the two of us. in America, Dom, it seems like that would be something where it's weird. Racist isn't remotely the right word. It just strikes me as something that, because that, it implies, I'm struggling to find the right word. I feel like Probst was implying that Abby's Brazilianness was like a remarkable disadvantage.
I don't think it's that at all. I think, if anything, he was giving her a lifeline because, if she doesn't have an excuse, and this is just an example of breathtaking lack of social awareness, you can forgive someone being maybe a bit socially awkward or getting some kind of situation wrong, but it takes dedication to fuck up your placement in a group the way that Abby has. It's actually kind of impressive, I think. And so if Rose is suggesting that maybe there's some other explanation for it that maybe Abby isn't entirely responsible for, then if anything, that seems to be helping her.
Okay, see, that's one counter-argument that I've heard made, which is this was an attempt on Probst's part to kind of give her an out and say, okay, well, it's not I'm an awful person who just doesn't pick up on things. It's I'm from Brazil. And this is actually, I think, where the idea, this is where Denise starts harping in on Abby a little bit. And this is for the first, it begins, well, where she's talking about, you know, it's not anger at Abby, it's frustration with Abby, in that I feel like I can never get a word in edgewise, and then Abby goes on and proceeds to interrupt the sentence 6 times.
Yeah, and people have been saying that this is something which lessened their appreciation for Denise and made them more sympathetic to Abby, and I just find that baffling. I don't understand it at all.
Upon first watching the episode live, that was absolutely the situation for me. I thought Denise was getting a bit out of line with Abby, and again, I think this was a ton to do with the edit, where she kept making analogies that were theoretically not specifically about Abby, but were, if you're reading between the lines, could quite easily be interpreted to just be direct slams on Abby. For instance, talking about, like, playing Survivor with Abby. Not, she didn't phrase it as playing Survivor with Abby as, like, bringing a moron to a poker table and just taking their money. But that seemed clearly what to be the intent, or to be the message. And that's I can't blame Abby for interpreting it that way, I guess.
Yeah, I think there have been examples of people in the past who did qualify as goats in the same way that Denise seemed to be suggesting that Abby would, where it would have been rude and maybe a bit classy to say this kind of thing about them. But I don't think that that's fair to say of Abby, because Abby is someone who has needlessly burned every bridge she possibly could have built with people in this group. And so when, like, from Denise's perspective, if you think about it, you're trying to help Abby. Everyone else has been trying to help Abby. It's not as if they just dismiss her being there from the get-go. They gave her a chance to ingratiate herself, and she threw that back in their faces. And now everyone else is trying to offer her ways to get herself into their good graces again, and Abby is just rejecting this as well. Like, Probst is trying to help her, and now Denise, the person most qualified of anyone there to offer some kind of constructive criticism, is doing so, and Abby is undermining her as a professional, saying, oh, well, you're just a psychologist or something. And that's not a lack of familiarity with what Denise does. That is willful ignorance on Abby's part. So, yeah, if I'm Denise, I'm justifiably angry there.
Well, this is why I say, upon rewatching this, I was very much okay with, I believe, how Denise... This wasn't the Denise where I think this was a flawless 10 out of 10 performance, much like we've seen pretty much everything else from Denise in terms of social interactions. But the underlying principle, I think, for why I'm more okay with this is, from all indications about what I've seen out of Denise, it would take a lot, like a month worth of just aggravation, to get this kind of response out of Denise.
Right. Denise does not seem like someone who is angered easily. Or if she is, she certainly doesn't show it. And so for things to get to this stage, it probably isn't because Denise is being unreasonable. It's more like that Abby is being completely fucking unreasonable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. One thing that's worth noting here is that, sure, Denise may not endear herself to Abby by doing this, but she's certainly endearing herself to everybody else. This may be the same kind of thing we had with Sophie and Cochrane, where Sophie is just able to slam Cochrane to his face, and, yeah, that's probably not going to do great things for her relationship with him, but it's only going to raise her in the esteem of everyone else who hates Cochrane. And similarly with Abby. Like, if everyone else in the game hates Abby, then bashing Abby may be the correct thing to do. Going back to the Jeff Probst question quickly, his role in the show, beyond just narration, is to be a mediator. Like, they go to tribal council, which is a venue explicitly designed not only for the formal voting procedure, but also to air everybody's dirty laundry. And so it's his job to ask these kind of probing questions of people that are going to elicit this kind of response. And as someone who is a host of a TV show, he wants to get the reactions from people that are going to look best on a TV show. And that, if that means trying to elicit Abby's breakdown, then that's what he's going to do. And I don't think he was being specifically unfair to Abby. If anybody acted in the way that Abby did, he would have done the same thing. It's not as if he decided, well, I'm going to treat Abby this way no matter what she does. For instance, if Scooping had given these kinds of ridiculous answers, then he would have treated him the same way. But we know things about Scooping which lead us to know... Okay. We know things about Scooping which suggest that he's never going to be in that kind of position. Whereas we've seen enough of Abby to know that she's retired enough that this is going to come up over and over again. So it's not like... It's not like Jeff is just picking on her for no reason. There are valid reasons for him to be doing this.
Mm-hmm. And in the interview I just listened to, he was talking about doing a lot of this for the viewing audience's benefit, which is he understands that he's asking the questions he thinks they would want to know the answers to. And I'm curious if you think that may be, you know, obviously Jeff has been an executive producer on Survivor for a long time now. And I'm curious if you feel like maybe he has too much of a vested interest in making this a great TV product rather than upholding the integrity of the game.
I don't think that at all. Like, his role is to be like the Greek chorus, where he is supposed to be the intermediary between the people in the game at that snapshot of time and the audience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was mostly playing devil's advocate. I agree with you fully. I think Probst is well within line and is doing a fantastic job as usual.
Yeah, I get a sense that a lot of people watching the show want Probst to be someone like Phil Cohen from The Apprentice. Jesus Christ, from The Amazing Race. But the two shows are so different that I think it's not realistic to expect that kind of similarity.
Right, yeah. We actually had this conversation a little while ago off air talking about Phil and Jeff, where I think Phil is basically flawless at what he does, but what he does is nothing close to what Jeff Probst does.
Right, yeah. If you ask me who I think should be the host of The Amazing Race, it's Phil Cohen, and nobody else comes into the conversation at all. But that doesn't mean that what he does is what Jeff Probst should be doing. And I think if you swap them on their respective shows, they would probably both be good at it, but I think they've been trained over time. They're ideally suited to what they're respectively doing.
Yeah, so, you know, us, like everyone else, big fans of both Jeff and Phil. I think the place that we want to go on to now is more getting into the actual strategy of this episode. And the place that I think we want to go is where we began skipping over, really, when we were doing our recap, which is Scoopin actually approaches Malcolm and is talking about, so do we want to play down to six? And this is where they're really force-feeding us the idea of these six want to be the six together. Or do we, you know, we play down to six and then it's game on, or do we make a plan? And Malcolm, I think, has a nice response, which is, well, do we want to wait that long to make a plan? And this is a very innocuous thing. Like, maybe innocuous is the wrong word. It seems very unsuspicious to me, and I'm fine with that as a response if I'm Scoopin, and I still want to make a plan with Malcolm, I think.
Yeah, I also like it because it puts the onus on Scoopin to then suggest something to Malcolm. Like, if Malcolm says, yeah, this is good, and then when we get down to that, why don't we team up together? It seems almost too earnest, if you like. Whereas this way, if Scoopin is the one to first put forward the idea, then Scoopin can't really go back on it later, especially given that he's someone who, it seems, wants to play with honesty and integrity and all of this crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think it was interesting that when they were discussing about it, they were like, okay, so who can we count on? And Scoopin brings up Denise, like, well, you're probably pretty solid with Denise, right? And he's like, oh, yeah, I think Denise would be good, and you probably would, Lisa seems like she'd be good, right? Like, they brought up each other's partner. I think it was cool. And then now the issue is selling it to both Lisa and Denise. And the other issue is Scoopin really selling it to himself.
Sure. Like, Lisa and Scoopin both seem to be the type of people who, when they commit to something, are going to stick to it. And so that makes them very dreaded for any of the other potential players in the game to team up with and cement some kind of final four deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's interesting because Malcolm, when they were off on reward, this is when he started talking about the idea of, okay, the reason he didn't want to be talking strategy on reward is I want to be making a final four or final three, some kind of long-term deal very soon, and I don't want it to be with these people that I'm off on this reward with. And this is kind of of course, people are now trying to get their ducks in a row, basically, because they're anticipating Pete or Abby going next, and then four people is going to be a majority with seven left. And so that's really what the core of what we're going to be looking at when we're talking about this strategy. And so we have this one option for Scoopin and Lisa, which is to go with Malcolm and Denise, but Scoopin's not really entirely sold that that's the way he wants to go, and so he goes and approaches Lisa and asks her if she trusts Penner or Malcolm more, and she actually says Penner, and they go to talk to Penner, and I thought this was a very important scene here.
Mm.
Yeah, because basically the way it goes down is they say, Lisa goes and approaches them and says, look, I really like both of you, I want to go to the end with you, and Penner basically says, thanks, I'll think on it, but nothing, I don't want to make any commitment to anyone.
Yeah, I facepalmed in real life when I saw this. It was just, I think Penn legitimately might have thrown away $1 million here, because it seemed like he was their first port of call. Like, if he had accepted the deal that Mike and Lisa had offered, then they would probably be the final four, or at least the three of them would be there, and maybe Carl would have been dragged along, maybe somebody else. But at least Penn would be in there until final five, final four, at which point, if they sit together, then he's probably the favorite to win the game. Whereas now, it seems like he gave them a chance to go and get something else with Malcolm and Denise, and now he's lucky to make it into that stage of the game to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And also, just prior to that scene, during the Malcolm and Scoopin scene, Scoopin had a line where he says, when someone wants to take you to the final four, you have to strategically say yes. Even if you don't necessarily mean it. And then there was that little audio thing, the ding, and then the Penner scene came on right after.
Right. So leaving aside the fact that this just doesn't make any sense in the abstract, I think the editors want us to think that this is where everything went wrong for Penner, potentially.
So if we want to look more long-term, do we think things are going to start, is this going to have serious long-term consequences for Penner?
Well, I think it will, yeah. I think this could easily be the difference between him either going out in fourth or getting first place and him going out in seventh, sixth, or fifth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like you just said, this, and like Lisa said in the confessional, this rejection of this offer could easily have cost him $1 million. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what his real plans are, because it seems like if he wants to go down to six and then play it out from there, he should know that anytime someone says that to you and that's their plan, that's not the plan. That's their plan for you. And for that to be his plan for himself is pretty remarkable to me, being that it's his third time.
Right, yeah. Even if you don't want to think ahead and just want to sort out everything when you get down to six, you can't reasonably expect everybody else to feel the same way. Like, they're going to be making their own plans for themselves. And if you don't factor into those, which you probably won't if you're telling people, let's wait until we get to six, then what are you expecting to happen?
Yeah, it's also another thing is, it also, I'd say that it makes it look to the people who are offering to you like you've already got something else lined up and you're just not interested in lying to them about it.
Exactly.
Although one thing I might add about this Penner situation is, I think if he did, and I'm not suggesting that he did and we just didn't see it, but it's possible that if he takes this line initially, waits about 10 minutes, and then pulls Lisa and Scoopin aside and says, you know, I've given it some thought. I'm really wanting to work with you two too. I'm fully on board. Then it comes across as more trustworthy than it would have in the first place, I think.
Maybe, although at the same time, if you have to think about it, I think that comes across as less secure than if it's something which you agree to immediately, suggesting that you've had it at the back of your mind all along.
Okay, yeah, I certainly think, generally speaking, when you're approached with something like this, act like that's what you've been wanting too, and say yes.
Right, yeah. I thought it was interesting that Penner was lumped in with Carter when they made this deal, because we haven't really seen anything between Penner and Carter since before the merge, and even then, Jeff Kent was the bridge between the two of them. So, do we think there's something going on between them that we haven't seen? Because we saw Carter, when Jeff Kent was still in the game, saying he was happy to drag Penner along in the game for a while, but then he wanted to cut him loose before he gets to the end game. So there's clearly no underlying loyalty there.
I think it was more a function of, because what we end up seeing is, because Lisa wants to trust Penner more, Malcolm and Denise, when Lisa and Scoopin are looking for a Final Four deal, there's Malcolm and Denise, there's Pete and Abby, and then there's Penner, and then Carter's the only other person left. And I think it's hard to do one with Penner and one of Malcolm and Denise. So it's really, I think Carter was mostly there by default, honestly.
Yeah, I think the reason is, going to the final seven round, which is coming up immediately, then you want to have a group of four so that you have the majority no matter what happens. And so if you're bringing Penner in, you need a fourth person, and you can't really break away Malcolm and Denise from the other one. And you presumably don't want Abby in there just because she's a wild card. So Carter's the only person left. And so regardless of his relationship with Penner, he's just the default choice.
Right, yeah. And this is, it's interesting because in this episode itself, who aligns with who within the group of six isn't going to make a difference for this vote, the vote that we just saw, whatsoever. But it's very interesting watching them all trying to line up their end games. And because of Penner's ambivalence, this leads, Scoopin's like, look, Malcolm wants to go shake on this in the woods right now. And they go up and meet up with Malcolm and Denise, and they do a nice little four-way crisscross. I don't even know how they pulled it off. It was kind of cool. A little handshake. And it seems like Scoopin gives a confessional saying, you know, I'm concerned, basically. Like, Malcolm's a gamer, and that worries me, but I felt like I didn't have a choice.
Yeah, a lot more than four fingers in that handshake, it looked like. but I think Scoopin was right to be concerned about this. I think his concerns might be unfounded to an extent, because Malcolm knows that he can probably beat Scoopin in the finals and has no reason to betray him in the immediate future. But I'm glad that Scoopin is at least aware of the possibility that people might not be all that they seem to be.
Yeah, the part that I like the most about Scoopin, not only certainly I like his skepticism regarding Malcolm and that as far as a long-term plan, I liked his idea that I liked his choice of, I felt like I didn't have a choice, because Scoopin, after Penner approaches you after you approach Penner and get the response you got, you didn't have a choice. Like, this was the move for them, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. Although, again, I think Scoopin and Lisa are the kind of people who their primary concern is loyalty, and so when asking what they're considering from a kind of cold, rational perspective, that doesn't really enter into that equation.
Mm-hmm. So, again, like I mentioned, this didn't have any actual bearing on how this specific vote was going to play out. But do we want to look further now about how these Final Four deals and all of the, and all of this politicking, yeah, could end up playing out, because now that we've seen this big handshake between Malcolm and Denise and Lisa and Scoopin, as we enter this round of seven, those four could quite easily stick together throughout the rest of the game and comprise the final four. So what do you think about the future of that group?
Well, I think the first question that comes up is the six that were originally going to go to six still going to go there anyway? So leaving aside the fact that Penna turned down the deal, are Penna and Carly still going to be there and they're just going to vote out Abby as planned? Or do they think, well, now that we have this final four deal in place, we need to get rid of the biggest threats that aren't in this final four, and Penna and Carla are both more threatening in their own ways than Abby ever could hope to be?
Right, yeah, and this is, again, why I'm seeing, we heard so much about the six. Okay, we want to get to six, and Penna seems to genuinely want to get to six, and they all really seem, as far as we've seen, can tell so far, to genuinely want to get rid of Abby in the next round. Which, much like getting rid of one of Peter Abbey this round, I think this is worse. I think this would be a mistake for many people, just because perhaps because of how caustic and much of a powder keg Abbey could potentially be, there's certainly some risk that she could just go batshit and blow up anyone's game at any time, which could be you if you risk leaving her in. At the same time, she's clearly never going to win this game. She's clearly never going to win a challenge. She's not going to try to form any alliances. If you can somehow get her to vote, she's got to vote for someone. She might as well vote with you if you can convince her that you're going to be the one who can keep her in the longest. Like, I feel like there's a lot of room to play with Abby still in at Final 7.
Do you think she's the kind of person who is open to rational argument, though? Like, is she going to listen to a pitch which involves you saying, well, you may as well vote with me because this is in your best interest for reasons X, Y, and Z? Or is she just going to spaz out, essentially flip a coin and just go with whoever? Like, is she just going to wake up one morning and say, I want to go with these people, and that's Abby's decision-making process?
I think, to answer your initial question, no, she's not the kind of person who's going to respond to rational argument. She is, however, the kind of person who's going to respond to irrational argument, which is, if you can make her take something personally, I think that's a good way to get her to put her vote on someone.
That's true, but I also think that Abby taking things personally involves her just putting everything out there. And so if you try to plant these in the mind that somebody is moving against or whatever, then she's probably going to go after that person and reveal everything that's been suggested to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so that person now has reason to distrust you, and now everything's just blow up in your face. So if you're someone like, I don't know, Malcolm, for instance, who might expect to be in a good position anyway, you don't want a variable like Abby in the game, because you don't need her in there to win. And so you don't want anything in there that could disrupt your carefully laid plans.
That's right. And I have actually written out here, I think Malcolm is the one who has the most incentive next round to be pushing for Abby to go.
Because it seems like the people who we're considering as serious contenders to win the game at this point are Malcolm, Denise, and Penna, with Scoop in as a distant fourth, I think.
Lisa?
And I don't think Lisa's in the hunt anymore. And
oh,
even
wow.
If she is, okay, I think Lisa could win the game. But if she does, it's not going to be because she's devised this kind of master plan in her head that she then follows through and executes carefully each individual step. It's going to be that somebody takes her there and she's just liked more than the others are, or that she's disliked less than the others are. So when we, as people interested in strategy, considering what people should do, then it doesn't make sense to talk about Lisa.
I feel like Lisa's at least shown some willingness to stick her own neck out for her what she feels is her own best interest.
Right, but that only within a certain set of moral constraints. Like, originally, she wanted to blindside Malcolm, yes, and that would have been a fantastic game move, but she wanted to do that because that she deemed that to be the best interest of her tribe as a whole, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't because of some introspection about her own self-interest or whatever.
I understand what you mean, which is, if we want to be looking at people who are going to dictate how this game plays out, we're looking at Malcolm, Denise, and Penna, yes?
Right. Yeah, and the point about those three is that I think the three of them are the biggest jury threats as well. So they beat Lisa, they beat Scoobin, and they obviously beat Carter and Abby. So they have a bit of room to play. So they can afford to get rid of Carter or Abby if the situation requires it, with the knowledge that they can still comfortably win the game.
Oh, for sure. So now that we're looking ahead at Final 7, what do we think that they're going to end up getting rid of Abby, or do enough people have that kind of incentive?
Well, is this a question of where they should or where they're going to?
Whether they should, or whether it's who should or who should. Because, again, like I said, I think Malcolm has a lot of – I guess one easy way to do this is talk about Malcolm, Denise, and Penner just entering this next round, because I think a major consideration to make as we look forward is Malcolm's now got the only idol left in the game, and I think it's going. I think we can operate under the assumption that it's going to expire at Final Six, which means he's got two more rounds left to play it. So let's examine Malcolm's position specifically here. What are your thoughts about this as you're looking ahead at this Final Seven round and when you're going to be playing it?
Yeah, I think Malcolm having the idol is actually a disincentive for Lisa and Scoobin to go with Penner as their first port of call here. Because, like, let's say you go with Penner and Carter. Now, at Final Seven, if you don't take Malcolm out and you just go with Abby, which I assume would be the plan instead, then at Final Six, Malcolm essentially has to use his idol because there's no reason not for him not to. And so, if either he or Denise wins immunity at that point, then suddenly things become very messy indeed, because now the two of them are almost guaranteed to be safe if Malcolm wants them to be. And even if he doesn't, you have to try and play around that possibility that he might use the idol on Denise, or himself if Denise wins immunity. So now, given that that seems to be an entirely likely occurrence, that might be a reason to instead go with Malcolm Denise, just ride out that safely until Final Five, past the point where Malcolm's about to expire, and then if you want to take a shot at it, then you're free to do so.
I think if I'm in specifically someone like Penner's spot, where I say Penner because I think he's thinking about the game, and he's in potentially future opposition to Malcolm and Denise, when thinking about Malcolm's idol as a presence in the game, I'm concerned about the idea of letting him have it there in whatever round it expires, on the grounds that if he wins immunity, it could and is probably most likely to be Denise that he wants to save, because he then would have two immunities for that round. But it doesn't have to be, and it could be anyone. Like, if he knows who the votes are going on and he feels that's a bad boot for him, he could find that person, put his own vote with that person on someone else, and idle out whoever he wants.
Right, and that might be a reason to make him think that he has a secure Final Four deal now, and the best way to make him think that is if he genuinely does have a secure Final Four deal now.
Yeah, so in terms of moving ahead now, what other combinations are you looking at in terms of voting blocks? Because it seems like, regardless of how these six end up, whether or not they take out Abby, it seems that four of the six are going to be the four that come together as, like, the power four. What other combinations are you looking at here? Is there any way that Lisa and Scoobin are not involved?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think Lisa and Scoobin are always going to be two of the four, and it's just a question of which pair they pick up to go along with them. Because the other two pairs in the game both know that the others contain at least one threatening player. Like, obviously, Malcolm and Denise are very threatening individually in their own right, and Penner's someone who's had a target on his back for the entire game and could very easily win if he makes it there. Whereas Lisa and Scoobin both seem easier to beat in a jury vote and much less likely to try and shake things up in a way that's not conducive to your own best interests. So, like, let's say that Lisa and Scoobin, and they seem to be the ones who are making the decision here because they're the ones that are going to be in play no matter what. Let's say they go with Malcolm and Denise. So now at Final Seven, you might be thinking that you know Penner has a justified reputation for being a solid schemer, someone who's willing to try and shake things up. If he thinks he's in danger, then that's what he's going to do, and he could very well be successful at it. So you might want to take out Abby at seven just on the grounds that that's what he's expecting to happen, and so when you do try and blindside him at Final Six, that's more likely to go through unopposed.
Yeah, I think actually taking out Abby at Final Seven, while it seems counterintuitive, at least to me, for many reasons, because of how much of a goat I perceive Abby to be with regard to an endgame, I think there are a lot of people who actually have some incentive to be taking her out. Those people being Malcolm, who could then, on the grounds that he could then have his idol in the round of six, Lisa and Scoobin, who know that if they get rid of Abby, they're going to have their choice of pairs to pick between in the round of six. And then Denise, I think, is going to be in a fine spot also, knowing that she's in pretty good shape if Malcolm has his idol in Final Six.
Yeah, and even though we're not really focusing on what makes strategic sense for Lisa and Scoobin for the reasons we gave earlier, I think it makes a lot of sense for them to take Abby, because Abby's someone who has shown herself to be irrationally inclined to not want to align with them.
Okay, I feel like if you're certainly with Scoobin, that's absolutely the case, and with Lisa after you've just broken up with her, so to speak, that's the case. I think the one person I would say might want to be leaving around Abby is Penner, who, like we've mentioned, has had a target on his back the whole time, and I think Abby could really serve to help him stay in the game for a while.
Yeah, this is what I'm thinking, because even if Lisa and Scoobin go with Penner and Carter, then Penner's not in a great spot there, because Carter has shown himself to be willing to turn on Penner when the time comes. And so when it gets down to Final Five, let's say, I could easily see Lisa and Scoobin picking up Carter and just going after Penner. And so if Abby's there in the game at that point, Abby's not going to want to go with Scooping and Lisa. And so Penna might be able to sweetheart her and Carter and try and break up Lisa and Scooping at that point. And then he's in the final four where all he needs to do is win one challenge and he's in the finals. And even if he doesn't, he might have a chance to get there anyway.
Right. I was thinking if I'm in Carter's situation, I'm probably just trying to maximize my dollar EBIT. Like, just, I'm okay with, in his position, like, the Sandra approach of, as long as it's not me, just keep me around so I can keep staying in and having a shot. As long as I'm not out, I'm still in, basically.
Right, yeah. I don't know, because even though we say that Lisa and Scooping seem to want to play the game in the Christian, quote-unquote, way that Penna described, when it comes down to, say, Final Four, if they do all go there together, and they're faced with a choice between taking Penna to the end, who is certainly going to win if he gets there, I think. I don't think that's in doubt anymore. And going with Carter, who is definitely going to lose, I find it hard to believe that they would place their loose ties to Penna over a guaranteed $1 million for one of them and take Penna instead of Carter.
No, I concur entirely. And that's why I'm saying if I'm Carter, I'm happy to just keep surviving because I know Carter may actually even be someone where Abby's not the worst person in the world to keep around.
Yeah, so if you think that Penna needs to win the Final Four immunity no matter what in order to make it there, then his priority has to be, firstly, taking people to Final Four who are less likely to win immunity, and secondly, maximizing his chance to stay there even if he doesn't win. And Abby seems to be a great person to take with him to Final Four then, because she might just randomly decide to go with him, and also she's not going to win a challenge anytime soon, if Carter's not showing any indication.
Right, yeah, it's an interesting idea of Penner requiring the Final Four immunity, and I think it's actually pretty close to reality if we want to look at people, if we want to assume people are going to be playing the people that we think are going to be there, namely, whoever's there I think is going to be playing it rationally and not want Penner to get to sit in front of a jury. Do you think there is a group, does he have a way with Abby or with Carter to make it through that round?
Well, funnily enough, I think Carter's the person that Penna should least want to stay in the game for that length of time, because he's someone who everyone else know they can beat in a jury vote, so they're going to want to take him instead of Penna. He's also very good in challenges, so Penna can't expect to beat him reliably if he needs to win. And Carter's shown that he's not willing to side with Penna if it comes down to that. And also, if Penna and Carter are perceived as a pair, then other people are going to want to break them up sooner rather than later. And so, like, if Carter somehow leaves at Final 7 or Final 6, that might actually be perfect for Penna, as weird as it sounds.
I think Carter actually going relatively soon at Final 7 or Final 6 could be good for a lot of people, because, again, it seems like removing a non-entity is good for the people who feel like they have targets on their backs.
It just seems very difficult for Penna to try and make that happen without coming across as very wolfy.
I think you have to take the approach of Carter's winning these immunities. He's now won two out of, what, three or four?
That's entirely possible. Like, for instance, let's say Carter wins the next immunity at Final 7, and you vote out Abby as normal, and then when you get down to 6, Penna can make the case that, look, we need to get Carter out, because if you don't, then he's going to take up a spot that could be reserved for one of us. And so if that happens, and then Penna's in the Final 5, suddenly he could be the swing vote between two pairs, be safe for that round, and then he's in the Final 4 with a lot of room to play. And, for instance, if Malcolm or Denise is there in the Final 4 with him, which they would be if this scenario were to take place, then that's someone he can point to and say, well, you can't beat this person in the finals, so you may as well take me instead of them, given that I'm a returning player and so on and so forth.
So I'm actually now thinking about that, the idea of Penner wanting to position himself between two pairs. I'm actually liking the idea of a Penner final. I think Scooping could be someone where if he can orchestrate a boot with, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, actually, a Final 5 with himself, Scooping, and Lisa, and Malcolm and Denise, it's pretty easy to sell Malcolm and Denise is like, listen, I'm by myself, these two are together, and they're super popular, and no one on the jury hates them because they weren't on starting tribes with any of them, and they're not returning players, and they're both really nice and capable people who everyone's demonstrated thus far to be in love with. I know that those are easy boots to sell, I guess, is the bottom line, and Penner could find himself, if it's a Final 2 or a Final 3, still in very good shape to win.
Yeah, so it seems like the two approaches that could have worked for Penner at this point are try and go after Malcolm and Denise now, take Abby and Carter as far as he can in the game with him, and just rely on the other players not teaming up to get him out. Or he can say, jettison Abby and Carter now, go to the Final 5 with these far more capable people, and rely on them turning on each other with me in the middle, and just ride that as far as I can.
And I'm very much on board with that, and that's what I think I would say I think Penner should be doing.
Yeah, I think that's a far easier thing for him to engineer as well. Because, although getting Carter out of the game might be tricky, but at the same time, I don't see any advantage to him being there for Penna.
I think it's, Malcolm probably is liking the idea of taking Carter out, because at that point, assuming Malcolm can then stop throwing challenges, he's going to have a pretty substantial edge.
Do you think he's been throwing challenges so far? Because he hasn't talked about it in any secret scenes, as far as I remember.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either if he has been, but at the same time, I could see how his performance is consistent with him not throwing challenges.
That's true, and I'd also like to point out, now that I'm Malcolm at this round of seven, I will not be throwing this final seven immunity challenge with my idol in my pocket. I'm going to try to get that, guarantee myself that I have the idol in the final six, and know that it's going to be really unlikely Denise goes at seven.
Yeah, so returning to the original question, which this whole discussion stemmed from, which I never really got around to answering, if you're Malcolm, when and if do you play your idol?
I'm trying to hold on to it to final six, and because of that, I probably play it if I don't have immunity at final seven, which sounds weird. If I'm convinced that the rest of the group is cool with Abby being the final seven boot and that's it, then I'm considering not playing it. I have a hard time not playing it at seven without that immunity necklace. Because I feel like there are going to be situations where if he knows that he can just make it to final six and someone other than him goes, he's going to have enough combinations of people left where he can at least find three in the round of six.
Yeah. So looking at it in a much more abstract sense, you have three groups of two, essentially. We can question whether Penna and Carter are actually a group or not. And then you have this one outlier in Abby. So you would expect two of those pairs to come together, and that seems to be what's going to happen. Does it ever make sense for them to try and scoop up Abby, or, like, without knowing anything about the identity of the people involved, what would you expect to happen given those numbers?
I would expect one pair to have tremendous incentive to boot Abby, one pair to think they do and not have it, and one pair to want to keep her around.
So, like, for instance, if the one person gets booted at seven and it's three pairs in the final six, then you'd expect one of those pairs to team up with the other, boot out the most threatening member of the third pair, and now that surviving member of the third pair is now in a very good position, it seems.
That's right. So in terms of when I'm talking about those three different criteria, whichever person, whichever pair has the once, if they get to final six as three pairs and one person then goes, whichever person that swing vote is going to side with at final five, that is the pair who has the most incentive to be taking Abby out at final seven.
Right. And similarly, the most threatening person in the pair that's going to be broken up most likely at final six is the one with the most incentive to keep Abby around.
And that, right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so you can map that onto the actual scenario and work out, so who has the most interest to keep Abby around and who doesn't and so on. Yeah, so we talked about what we think should happen. Let's talk about, for a moment, about what we think will happen. Now, everything seems to point to Lisa and Scoopin siding with Malcolm and Denise in the short term. So do we expect Abby, Penna, and Carter to be the next three boots in some order? Or is it like, for instance, if Abby goes to seven and then Carter goes to six, do things get shaken up at final five?
I think things could get shaken up. I would love nothing more than to see Malcolm, Denise, Penner, Scoopin, and Lisa as the final five, because I think a ton of stuff could happen, regardless of what we talked about should happen in that situation.
Well, also, I'd be thrilled with any one of them winning, which would, I mean, it's a very unusual situation to be in as a viewer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, a final five such as that would be pretty unprecedented, I would say.
Probably the most likable final five in history, would it be? I mean, there have been 25 seasons now, so there's probably some strong competition, but even so.
I would say Token Sheens, I would have been pretty not happy with anyone winning, but at least there was a very satisfying Final Five that I was happy to see play out the end game.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah. That was a decent comparison. So let's say that they go to the Final Four together, them being Malcolm, Denise, Lisa, and Scoopin, because it seems at that point Malcolm and Denise individually and as a unit are in a very interesting position where one of them is for sure going to win the $1 million, and to do that, that person who is going to win is going to have to cut the other at the Final Four, assuming that that's possible. So let's start with the situation where one of Lisa and Scoopin wins immunity, so either Malcolm and Denise can go at that point. What do you think happens? Do you think Malcolm and Denise are going to vote together, or are they going to realize, well, I have an easy $1 million here if I just vote the other person out, and as much as I like them, then that's a pretty easy choice to make?
I honestly, Dom, have no idea. I could see it going either way quite easily, because I think they're both really, both Malcolm and Denise are really, really capable, smart players who are both also simultaneously really, really nice people. And I do not know, like, I cannot predict based on the edit thus far whether either of them would be willing to cut the other. And I think if I had to say which was more willing, I guess I would say Malcolm, just probably because he's a guy. I don't mean that to be sexist in any way. I just feel like he would then just be more likely. We've seen guys play more cutthroat in general. And I think Denise also has, she's more concerned about, she's got more reason to believe, I think, that she could beat Malcolm than Malcolm might have reason to believe he could, beat Denise.
Well, that kind of answers my next question then, which is going to be, if Malcolm and Denise are in the final three together, which one of them do you think wins?
Again, I don't know. I think it could still go either way. I think Denise would be more confident, though.
Why'd you say that?
Rightly or wrongly. Because I think she is aware herself of how good she is with people, sure, certainly. And the fact that she has survived every single tribal council and no one's ever even considered voting her out.
Yeah, I mean that, and you don't get to be a successful therapist as Denise has been without getting along well with people, and I think she understands that.
And without a tremendous insight into how people are thinking.
Oh, for sure. Like, I think Denise would scoop up all of the old people's vote. I think Malcolm would scoop up all of the young people's votes, and there might be a crude dividing line, but I think that's realistic to expect.
I think it's certainly a start, and it wouldn't deviate much from that.
Yeah, I could see, for instance, RC voting for Denise instead of Malcolm, if you want to classify her as a young person, which I don't know. Like,
she's, what, 26?
Well, yeah, because at this point, it's like four of the people left in the game are over 40 or something. It's one of the oldest end game groups that we've had in quite a long time.
Right, yeah, it's probably since Thailand.
Yeah, and I think that actually contributes to why we like them so much, because they're all kind of experienced, mature, sane, rational people. And so it's like no matter which one of them ends up triumphant, then we're going to be happy with the outcome. And even though Malcolm is in like his mid-20s, he's someone who seems wise beyond his years, to some extent.
Certainly, yeah. And, you know, regardless of his tweets about how much of a rampant alcoholic he may or may not be. I think you're right. They all seem very worldly and that they would have the perspective to truly appreciate the experience, which I think plays a big role for me in appreciating a winner. Like, for instance, watching, you know, Nicaragua not an historically great season and knowing that Fabio was just going to immediately squander the money and not, like, I'm sure he had a great time and was very fulfilled by the experience and didn't care about the money and it meant more to him, like the experience was worth more to him than that, clearly. But it's still at least, it sits poorly with me when someone that who seems to have that little appreciation for what just happened ends up taking it down. And I think with any of these people, any of the older group or Malcolm, that would not begin to be the case.
Right. Do you think then that we might see a more quote unquote rational droid than we've seen in a while then? Because while each member individually might have a gripe with one of the finalists, they're going to be voting for somebody to win as opposed to thinking, well, this is a choice between the least of three evils.
Right, and I think that's a function of there are not going to be, as far as I can tell, any goats in the finals. Like, people are going to be voting based on who they want to see win rather than who they don't want to see win.
Do you think it would make sense to describe someone like Lisa or Scoopin as a goat?
Not Lisa to me at this point. Scoopin against certain people. Because it's just people are aware of how disliked Scoopin was amongst the Abby, Pete, and Artis.
Because I think at this point, Lisa exemplifies a dictum that it's not just about whether people like you or not, it's about whether they respect you. I think each of them as like Lisa as a person. They would happily go out for dinner with her or whatever, but it's based on her attitude to the game and her achievements within it, I don't think they could see themselves voting for her and respecting her in the way that they could for someone like Malcolm or Denise or Penna.
That's a good point, yeah, and I think Lisa has certainly come down as far as my first place equity goes, because she's, I think it was, again, she had some very good episodes a few weeks ago, and it has really been a central focus of the show, and who knows for what reason, because there's always the idea that, oh, well, they're pushing her so hard because she's famous and people recognize her and they want viewers.
Yeah. Returning quickly to the question of whether Malcolm or Denise might go at the final four if they're both not immune, I think it might be more likely to be Malcolm, just because I think there's been this kind of legacy built up in people's minds of this idea of Malcolm as a threat, where at the moment people think this guy is, yeah, he's smart and charismatic, and those are things which are universally true of Malcolm. They're going to apply whenever. But he's also athletic, so he's good in challenges, and he has the idol. And all of those things combined making up this picture of him as a threat in people's minds. Now, of course, when you get down to the final four and it's time to vote someone out, some of those factors aren't in play anymore. Like, it doesn't matter that he once had the idol. It doesn't matter that he was once good in challenges. But I don't think people consciously protest that, well, now we need to cut those things out and reassess our idea of Malcolm as a threat. I think people might reflexively just assume Malcolm was a threat, so he needs to go, without stopping to maybe reconsider it as much as they should.
I think, and I'm not saying that this is going to be their thought process, but if we're at Final Four and it's Lisa Scoop and Malcolm and Denise, and one of Lisa or Scoop is immune, and they could, and it, both Malcolm and Denise are willing to turn on the other one, I think a big deciding factor for me is whether or not we're at Tribal Council on night 37 or night 38.
Oh, as in whether it's the final three or final two?
Exactly. I'm inferring on which night that is, whether or not I'm thinking it's going to be final two or final three.
Well, that question changes all of the... That question changes the answers to all of the other questions entirely, I think. Because it may be that Malcolm and Denise both see an incentive to take each other to the final three if there's going to be a final two, on the grounds that they can get the other one to be voted out instead of them if the third person wins.
Mm. No, absolutely. And I think... for sure, there are, the idea, I think it's going to start coming up more and more often as we're getting closer and closer to the end, is people are going to start wondering about Final Two or Final Three.
Yeah, and this is why I think having Final Two is so much more strategically interesting than Final Three in some regards, because at Final Five, for instance, let's say it is the two players plus, let's say, Penner. Now, Penner can go with one of those pairs, and if those three sit together, he can be assured a berth in the Final Three. Whereas if it's a final two, now even at final four, he has to start thinking, well, you know, are these people who I've had this agreement with really going to take me over the other person they've been with for so much longer? And so we might see him flip over to the other side and try and cause a tie or whatever. It just makes things so much more dynamic.
Right, yeah, and I think another consideration perhaps worth weighing, just quickly to go back to this hypothetical final four, is I think if it is Denise, Malcolm, Lisa, and Scoopin, It's very noticeable. Denise is much closer in age to those two and much closer in personality to Lisa and Scoopin. I think she may have those two of anyone left strike me as the two most likely to take with them to the final three the person they like more. And also, right. Malcolm, I think, looks like a much bigger threat.
That's true, but just as a brief counterpoint, I think there's a temptation in that scenario for Lisa and Scoopin to look at Denise and think, well, we like her so much, we can relate to her so much. And so if we take her to the jury, then that's going to be true of the entire jury as well. They're going to see in her the same things that we do. Whereas with Malcolm, maybe we can't relate to him as closely on a personal level, and so that might be true of the jury as well, so we can take him for an easier victory.
And there might also be actually concern about splitting, like, they would get certain people's votes over Malcolm and not Denise. Like, the older jurors' votes would probably be more inclined to vote for Scoopin or Lisa over Malcolm, but not over Denise.
That's interesting. Yeah. One possibility that I've been entertaining is, could there be like a fire challenge at Final Four? Where if you have these two pairs going to Final Four together, and if each of them do generally want to remain loyal to each other before the other two people, then could we be seeing some sort of tie and whatever resolution there would be to that?
It's certainly within the realm of possibility. I think if we do see it, then someone has made a mistake.
Well, definitely, yeah. I don't think that's a question. I just think, yeah. Do you think that that's a realistic thing?
Yes, I do. I think it's entirely possible that Malcolm and Denise want to stick together on the grounds that they've been together the whole time, effectively the whole time, and that similarly with Lisa and Scoopin, if they are, in fact, the other two in the Final Four, and if Malcolm and Denise are the first two in the Final Four.
I guess the question... So we agree that then that Abby is probably likely to go to Final Seven then, right?
I think so, yeah.
So where does that leave Carter? Because he's someone who, it seems like there's no really good time to get him out, as in, you never really want to waste a round on Carter. I guess the reasoning for getting him out would be, he's good in challenges, so we don't want to have that messing up a plan that otherwise seems good for each of us.
I think the way you get Carter out is if Penner understands, oh, hey, if I'm in a Final Five with these two pairs, that's pretty good news for me. And Penner, okay. I think the onus would then be on Penner to start selling it, and I think he could. Because Malcolm and Denise are sitting there going, okay, Carter's fine with me. Malcolm's saying he's my biggest immunity competition going forward. He's probably a likely jury vote for me if I'm sitting there next to any of these people that's 45 or whatever. I think there's a ton of incentive for both of the pairs similarly to say, if we think we can get with Penner at the final three, if he'll vote with us to go down to final three, then we could be in very good shape too. So I think and we could quite reasonably see Abby go next and Carter go after that.
So we're getting to the end game now, and it's kind of exciting because before at the merge, like every step you go back, there are exponentially more scenarios to consider. So for instance, when we got to the merge, yeah, we can discuss like which six or seven people might come together to have the majority, but there, we could never realistically expect that group to stick together until the very end. Here now, we're reaching a spot where if two of these pairs come together, then they have a clear path through Final Seven and to the end game if they want it. And so we now the end game is, and so we can now really seriously start thinking about potential jury vote, what things, how things might stack up at Final Five, Final Four, potentially Final Three if it's a Final Two. So the analysis that we might be conducting now has a lot more kind of practical grounding.
Right, exactly. There was just so much more in flux, I would say, before, where there was just no realistic way to say with any degree of certainty, even past one round, who might then be sticking together, because so many people's priorities would change, and people, you know, interpersonal dynamics would change from round to round, and Lisa, you know, Abby's blowing up, and Jeff Kent wants Penner gone for no reason, even though it doesn't make sense for him, and all these other things. And I think, like Dom said, as we get further and further down, we're now getting to the point where we can really be looking at this in depth and really see more clearly how things might be playing out.
Yeah, definitely. So is there anything else that we need to get to today, or are we good to wrap?
I think we are all set to wrap, so I want to go and thank everyone who listened. Once again, subscribe on iTunes if you haven't yet. Check out the Hall of Fame podcast with Gary Wise coming soon. And that's all we got for you this week. We'll talk to you soon, guys. Take care. Bye.